You're listening to the podcast with dads of varying experiences, sitting, drinking a beer, and talking about what it's like to be a dad. Tim Beeman, John Lauder, and Paul Jones are the Beer Dads.
We're here to talk about being a dad, and we're doing it while drinking a beer. My name's Tim.
I'm John.
And I'm Paul.
And you're listening to the Beer Dads, presented by Small Batch Beer. Small Batch Beer is located at 241 West 5th Street in downtown Winston-Salem. You can find more about Small Batch from their website, smallbatchws.com. Small Batch is on Facebook. Also, they're on Twitter, and the handle is at smallbatchws. And on Instagram, it's Small Batch Beer Co. This is a reminder that none of us are licensed in any way, nor are we psychology professionals or counselors. We're just a group of guys, and in some cases, girls, that sit around talking about our experiences with the subjects we discuss. And we're back again.
Here we are.
Paul.
Yes.
Since you know this guest best, we're going to let you introduce. We do have a guest today. This is, you know, we do that every once in a while.
That's right.
And we're excited to have her here.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to let Paul introduce her and give the setup and whatever else he wants to say.
Well, I'm going to present Dara Kurtz. Dara and I have known each other going on probably 8 years or so. Kids been in same school, same grade. And I thought it would be an interesting topic to bring Dara in to discuss She had a successful battle against breast cancer, and I wanted to bring Dara in and discuss how she and her husband discussed the whole from beginning to end and shepherded her girls through the whole process, really, from beginning to where you are now. And then, you know, we can probably go off in a thousand tangents.
The normal craziness,
but you know, we're not all
we're fixing to get serious.
Yeah, we're fixing
all
to
right.
get serious. So
Dara, welcome to you.
Thank you.
To the Beer Dads.
I'm glad to be here.
So that's traumatic for the people that have to go through it. I mean, the person that has to go through it, you, but it's also traumatic for everyone that is directly associated with you, family, friends, everything.
It is. You know, it definitely happens just like you think it happens. I mean, one day you're fine, and then literally the next day you're not. And it just sort of comes out of nowhere, just like we've all heard. And so it all kind of started. I never get sick, and I had a cold that I couldn't get rid of. And everyone in my family had a cold. You know how that is with young kids. At the time, my oldest was in 8th grade, and my youngest was in 5th grade. And so we had a cold, but everyone else seemed to get better, and I couldn't get better. And it just lingered, and finally, I went to the doctor to get an antibiotic. I didn't go for any other reason but to get an antibiotic. And while there, I just happened to say, oh, by the way, I happen to have this lump on one of my breasts, and can you just take a look at it? And it was just the sick clinic. Doctor's offices have those. You just go in, you see whoever's on call. And so, of course, I just thought she would say, oh, you're fine. And I would get my antibiotic and be done with it. But she did not say that. She said, I definitely think you need to get that looked at, and we can schedule a mammogram for you. And I, of course, you know, didn't have time to do that. I was busy, and I told her, I'll just take care of this. And I had had it for a while. I definitely knew that I had had that lump there for a few months, but it wasn't anything that I would have gone to the doctor for, because I just really didn't think anything of it. And something told me when I left there with my prescription for an antibiotic, I got in the car and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to call my OBGYN right here and right now. And thank goodness I did. That call saved my life. That cold really did save my life. If I had not gotten a cold, I would not have gone to the doctor. And if I hadn't even thought to mention that to her, I just don't even want to go there. Mm. But so I went to the OBGYN that day, and the doctor that I saw said, yes, you definitely need to get a mammogram. And we scheduled it for the next day. And when I went to get that mammogram and ultrasound, the radiologist came out and she said, you have a 70% chance of having breast cancer. We need to do a biopsy. You need to come back next week to get it done. And, you know, I was by myself. I didn't bring John because I really didn't think anything of it. I really wasn't worried. I think it was like right around 4 o'clock. I had to pick up the kids. You know, life was kind of going on. And in that one moment, everything just sort of stops and freezes. And you kind of hit the pause button. And that weekend, it was a Friday, which here's a big lesson. Never go to the doctor on a Friday.
Wow.
Do not ever have any tests done or anything on a Friday. So that was a really long weekend. And we didn't want to say anything to the girls because we didn't know anything. So long story short, I had I had the biopsy done by, it actually ended up being a parent that was in our kid's class, and he will forever be my guardian angel. I mean, He was just unbelievable. He just happened to be there. I didn't even know he worked there, and he was amazing. So long story short, it was breast cancer. I did find it early. The pathology was the kind that there are a lot of treatments that they have, and is very... it reacts very well to the treatments, and I ended up having surgery really not that long after, maybe even just a few days. And I did a double mastectomy. I did chemo. I did radiation just for fun. And
yeah, just because the other two
just
were
because,
not enough.
You know, but I wanted to be as aggressive as possible. I mean, that was always my attitude from day one. I just want to be able to make peace with it and put it behind me and move on. But telling our kids was just one of those, it was as bad as you think it's going to be. You don't know what, no one wants to do that. And so it was a Friday afternoon. We waited. It was actually 1 week. It was 1 week from the time that I went that Friday afternoon and had to wait to get the biopsy. But anyway, we waited till they came home from school, and then John and I just said, you know, we have to tell you something. And our oldest daughter said, y'all look so pensive. What's going on? Does someone have cancer?
She used the word pensive.
She's very bright.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm not doubting.
I'm just kidding.
The three of us can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what that
is. No, I'm just kidding. She was just, you know, what's up? Y'all look really, right. What's strong. Going on? Yeah. And she said, do you have cancer? But it was kind of interesting because she thought it was John. She thought John was the one that had cancer. And I wasn't going to lie to her. And when she said that, it kind of started the conversation before we even really wanted to start the conversation. But I just kind of looked at her and I said, well, and... then we just, it's, of course, it all spiraled downhill pretty quickly. And we cried. I mean, of course, our whole family just sat there and cried. It was devastating for them. And my youngest daughter just started hyperventilating. I mean, she could not stop hyperventilating. And it's forever a memory that I wish I didn't have, but I'll never forget. And, but, you know, we promised them that we would be completely honest with them. We wouldn't keep anything from them. And actually, I want to say a couple days later, the doctor who ended up being my radiologist came to the house and sat down with the girls because I wanted them to hear it from a doctor that, you know, your mom's going to be okay. It's going to be a pretty sucky year. But everything should be fine. And so they were able to ask the doctor any questions they wanted to ask her. And I think that gave them a lot of peace of mind. But my oldest daughter took it a little bit better. She said, I've Googled it and, you know, I know everything and it's going to be fine. And our youngest daughter was obviously, she was in fifth grade at the time. But it was definitely not what I thought was going to happen that year. Of course, I never thought that was going to happen to me. I was 42 at the time and did P90X, exercise all the time, watched everything that I ate. You know, definitely wasn't a poster child for someone who we would think would get breast cancer. But that's the thing. Who's to say who's going to get something? We're all kind of vulnerable to that. And yeah. It is what it is.
You know, my my pilot code for my wife. So she's had a couple of scares over the last couple of years where the tests have come back and they've been borderline. So they ever go in for a follow-up. So they do a more extensive. So she does a mammogram. Then they, and I don't know the terminology, but the first false alarm, I went with her for the follow-up exam. And that was one of the, there have been two hospital-ish or doctor visit type things that I will never forget. Being with somebody, and that was one of them, because everybody in that room was in shambles. I mean, they were all, it was over, you know, it's that whole room is dedicated to women who were there for
right. one purpose,
breast exams. And, you know, the other one was, and these guys have heard the story, my youngest son had a heart issue, mm-hmm. and we were over at Brenner at the Children's Hospital, with him when he had he had a procedure. Yeah. And, you know, sitting in that room with those parents with whose kids are going through it, it is the worst feeling in the world, because you have no control.
You have no control.
None at all. And that was going to be my first question for you was how hard was it for your family? I mean, it's hard enough. I obviously can't even imagine what you went through physically and emotionally and everything else as you're on your own. But how did your family, how'd your husband react? I mean, you've talked about the girls and, you know, obviously, I mean, with kids, that's tough, but how'd your husband react?
He was great. He's a family law attorney, and he just looked at everything sort of matter of fact, if you will. He was the one that went with the yellow pad and took notes and kept the files, and he just sort of took that role. But, I mean, he was there for me every single day. It's so hard to come home to a spouse who is sick. And going through chemo, I mean, that's what makes you sick. I felt great, except for once I started the chemo, obviously, I didn't feel so great. Mm-hmm. And I lost my hair, and that was really hard for my kids and really for me and all of us. But coming home every single day to a spouse that's sick, it's got to be hard. And he was there. And our whole family obviously became a lot stronger. We've always been a really close family, but going through something like that, you can't help but hit the reset button and just kind of see things differently. And we all changed a lot after that experience. A lot of good things came from it. But you know, talking about the room that you were in, mm-hmm. we all drive by a hospital every single day. Every one of us probably, and we don't think about what's going on the inside of that hospital. We know in our minds that the purpose of that hospital is to take care of sick people, but we don't think about that could be us, that could be mm-hmm. me one day, because if we did, we couldn't live, I think, if we thought about all of the things that could happen to us.
I yeah. certainly think about it.
You do?
Yeah.
I had anything with cancer, but I had triple bypass heart okay. surgery just 3 years ago at age of 41.
Okay.
And I don't want to make this about me at all, but
yeah. It's always about you.
But you know, that's the thing is everyone goes through stuff. Yeah. You're not, everyone is going to have to deal with something sometime in their lives. Period.
But I understand what you're saying about the hospital thing. And every time I drive by Forsyth Memorial, or what they call just Novant, whatever they're calling it, secretly, I'm going, thank you.
Yes.
Because yeah. I'm here
that.
Because of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. They saved your life.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And we take good health for granted.
We
always say, you know, I had a great year. We have our health. We have our family. We have this. And when you don't have trials, that tends to become almost just like a pat phrase, something that you say. It's only when you have the flu that you realize, oh, man, it's great that it's been years since I've felt this bad, and I'm very thankful that I don't have to go through it. And that's just sick. That's not with a terminal illness or potentially terminal illness or with something that really rocks your world. And and the fear, I don't know that I've ever felt fear like that. I mean, when, and I don't know how you guys did it when it's you yourself. I mean, I'm a pansy. I really am. I hate pain. I hate dealing with, I'm a really bad sick person.
That may be the case. Cause I am too. I'm a wuss.
Yeah. It just,
but when you're in that moment, you decide, and I guess this way you decide, screw that. I'm going to live the best I can. Mm-hmm. I'm going to live my life. I'm not going to just sit. I can sit and feel sorry for myself. And there was days that I did.
I actually never felt sorry for myself. I really didn't. Yeah. It kind of surprised me. But every time I went to the room, the cancer room, if you will, to get a treatment, I just saw so many people that were younger than I was and had such worse scenarios than I did. Quite honestly, I felt lucky. Mm. I felt lucky that I had what I had and that there's been so much research and there was so much I could do. And I'll never forget a lot of the people that I met ever and the stories. And I mean, there are some brave people that go to battle every single day sitting in that hospital right now. And just the freedom that we have to feel good and drive downtown and sit here and have this conversation, you know, I don't ever want to take that for granted, that freedom.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's with your diagnosis, you got, for lack of a better term, a skillet upside your head.
Absolutely.
You know, that it's like, wait a minute. And this is, real life has just taken a hold of me and said, we're going to shake you up a little bit.
Right.
And that's, you know, the closest I've been is in 2007, lost my father to cancer. And,
oh, I'm sorry.
From November to August, I helped my mother be primary caregiver. So that's as close as we got, but he fought for 2.5 years. So it was, I've been in the treatment rooms with him, and, you know, my sister and I and my mother were all helping being part of the treatment team. And he was one of those, he never lost his will, so to speak. You know, he said it never was a woe is me moment. And that's a very special thing that I think you do see a lot of people almost want to try to give up. And, you know, unless you've been there, you can't say, I mean, me sitting in a room, I can't say with any semblance of any smart say to somebody, you know, well, shake it off. You're going to be fine. No, you don't know what I'm going through. So,
and even those who have gone through the same thing, that you could, don't know what you're going through.
Really go
well, they don't know what how you feel. I mean, I hate that one. I know how you feel. No, you don't. You might know what I'm going through. I was wrong on that. You might know what I'm going through, but you don't know how I feel. Now, with me, with being 41, I was younger than anybody else in the heart ward. And they kept saying, "Why are you here?"
Mm-hmm.
Because you told me I had to be. But actually, it was my body telling me I had to, because I didn't have, but almost had a heart attack at least twice in Disney World. That sucked. It was not the happiest place.
It's supposed to be the happiest place on earth.
Yeah. It certainly was not that time. That was the worst time I've ever had in Disney, and I've been 15 times. I love Disney, but I was not loving Disney.
Yeah. Not that. But, well, you'd have been loving anywhere.
Yeah, it could have been anywhere, but it just so happened that I was at Disney World. And it just, when I got back, I called the doctor and said, you know, I'm having this weirdness. And my mother-in-law is a nurse. She's been a nurse for over 50 years, and she thought it sounded like something completely different. The doctor thought it sounded like something completely different. And looking back on some recent developments, having my gallbladder removed, we think that it may have been something different. But even if it was my gallbladder and not having a heart attack, which they still think is what the closeness was, I wouldn't have had that stuff done without it being like, and I was 90% in one, 95 or 99% in one, 95% in another, and 75% in the third blocked. And
You would add the Widowmaker.
Yeah, well, the Widowmaker. Yeah. The Widowmaker. Mm. The vein they call the Widowmaker was 95% blocked.
Yeah.
Wow.
But everything's looking good now. But the point is, I can tell people I know what you're going through. Whenever they're having heart issues or whatever, you can do that with Ken. But no one can tell. You can't tell anybody I know how you feel, and no one can tell you that because we all react different. And like I said, I did have my few, and there were a few, but I did have a few feeling sorry for myself moments. And then it was like, you know what? Screw this again. I'm turning it around. I'm doing something.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't think there's anything wrong. I mean, it's human. Yeah. You know, it's human to have your ups and downs. It's the difference is how you react to that. How do you come out of it? And just saying, kind of putting your foot down and saying, screw this. I'm going to do whatever I got to do. I think that's a critical thing in anything in life.
And you have said before when 3B was there in the hospital with you, that was kind of a lift.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes through that. You know, Dara, you said the girls were right there side by side the whole time.
Absolutely. Yeah. They actually slept together every single night the night that we told them. They started sleeping together every night for probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
And just they would cling to each other. And but then I guess they decided that things were looking up. And
yeah, well, yeah.
One of them got tired of the mess, and they just
yeah,
you know, Joelle.
But
they
well, as your situation kind of eased, so
exactly.
So could
that's
they?
That's true. Right. True.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how? So you said it was a bad year.
It was a terrible year.
So, kind of walk us through like the whole process, the progress.
So I had surgery pretty quickly. Thank goodness. I just wanted to get it done. And
all of it. Do all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just.
Seriously. And that wasn't even a question. I mean, I always knew that if I had breast cancer, that's what I would do. So I didn't really have to spend any time thinking about anything. And so I did that. A few weeks after that, I started chemo. And that was the worst part of the whole experience for me. I can handle any form of pain, but I do not like to be nauseous. That is like the worst feeling for me, to throw up. And so, you know, you're putting someone who doesn't like to throw up in a situation where you're going to feel
sick.
Just
going to be sick for 36 hours.
Yeah. So that sucked pretty much. But there are some really good drugs, and I was not afraid to take one. Yeah. And I really took a nausea pill like every 6 to 8 hours, I would say for four months straight. It was working, and I didn't want to stop. Mm-hmm. But I did spend one weekend in the hospital because I was throwing up, and that was a bad weekend. But after that, so that was 4 months. Then after that, I think we waited a few weeks, and then I started radiation. No, actually, I started radiation and did that towards the end of the chemo. So I had both of those.
Oh, you had the double.
That must have been rough.
It really wasn't. I was just very, very tired. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I was just glad to be doing everything. I really wanted to be as aggressive as possible.
Yeah.
And so I just kept saying that to myself. And then after that, I think waited a few weeks, or I can't even really remember. It's kind of a blur. And then I did reconstruction. So... Exhibit A. I earned the girls. And then I actually had a hysterectomy a few months after that.
Just couldn't get enough of the medical
profession. There literally was not one thing left for me to do, but I really wanted to do everything. And this was estrogen caused, so, you know, I did sort of an Angelina Jolie thing.
Right.
Yes. But I actually did a full hysterectomy, and that was not a big deal at all.
No, after what you had been through.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, that's a routine thing now anyway.
It was laparoscopic.
It can be.
It was all. It was easy.
It can be.
Not a big deal.
I've got another close call with the pilot with her hysterectomy. She got nicked, and they didn't find it. They rolled her out of the OR. I'm waiting in a room for they don't show up. Call down. I finally had a nurse call down to the operating room. They had to roll her back in and patch her up, and almost...
She had hemorrhaged.
She had hemorrhaged, so she was anemic 4 weeks after that. But anyway,
yeah,
that was... So, yeah, I guess that's another point is I don't care how routine it's supposed to be.
True. I mean, anytime you go into surgery, you're putting yourself
even
in
an appendectomy is not routine.
Vulnerable situation. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, true.
But, so, you had the double mastectomy first.
I did.
Now... And I know you did all the other stuff too, but where did they think that the problem was just in the breast themselves?
Oh, yeah. So I was really lucky that I went to the doctor that day. Bottom line, if I hadn't gone to the doctor, I probably wouldn't have found it when I found it. I mean, that's it right there. And so I was really lucky.
Well, and you know, there's, since you've been so forward with us, had you started your regular mammograms?
I had. Yeah, I had, and, you know, I had had one back in December, and this was April, so now they have something called a 3D mammogram, which, had they had that at the time, had I gotten it, they probably would have found this back in December, but I didn't have that, we didn't have them at that time, and so the mammogram, everything showed up perfectly fine, so it was sort of a false sense of security. So I definitely believe in the 3D mammograms, and my girls will definitely have those for sure, because they're more, this is just a way better test.
Well, yeah, it's a whole lot better technology.
So with that being the case, do you think, because Angelina Jolie had the procedure just on the thought that she might, do you think this will influence your girls to,
to do that? No. Well, Angelina Jolie has what we call a BRCA. I can't remember if she's BRCA 1 or 2, but there's a gene called the BRCA1 and BRCA2. And I did every possible genetic test I could do, and I don't have those genes, thank goodness. But there's probably definitely a genetic reason that this happened.
Yeah.
And we don't know. I did every possible genetic test I could do and nothing showed up. So my girls will be watched very closely, but because we know that we aren't BRCA 1 or 2, we don't feel the need to go and do
just on the spur on a whim.
Right.
So if they decide they were going to,
I would fully support that.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind at all. You know,
I'm not saying right or wrong. I was just asking how you think your experience would influence, if possible, them in the future, and then your reaction to that. And I think you answered that quite well.
And I think they definitely, you know, they've thought about it. How can they not have already thought about it?
Yeah, they saw what you
went through. So I wasn't going to tell them about the genetic testing that I did in case it came back. But then when everything came back and I didn't have any of it, then I told them, by the way, I did genetic testing. But
they would have found it and found out about it and asked, and then you would have.
Well, I'm thinking maybe that had it come back positive.
Right.
That you would have told them too, but it would have been.
I think I would have told them way down the road.
Oh, yeah. Eventually, though. Yeah.
Eventually, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe not right now.
But not right now. Yeah. But I'm glad I don't have that problem. That's a good thing.
That's great.
And you know, and they probably, I mean, my family on both sides, we have a history of heart disease, right? So obviously, I take it seriously. When I go to the doctor says, hey, you know, you're borderline with your cholesterol, whatever. I don't just say, oh, yeah, whatever. I'll just eat one fewer serving of fries a month or whatever it is.
It doesn't work that way.
But you know,
I can attest.
Would that be nice if it did?
It would. It would be great. I don't know. I'd hate to give up fries.
Fries are my favorite too.
Anyway, so, but I know that I've always taken it more seriously, knowing the family history. I am sure that your daughters will be more vigilant than somebody who comes from a family with no history of. And
they'll go to doctors that actually specialize in that. They probably won't just go to an OBGYN that doesn't really specialize in breast cancer.
Yeah, they're gonna.
It'll be more of an issue.
Right.
Probably by the time they get to where they're needing
you
to do all that
so
stuff.
Right. Hopefully, maybe won't even have to deal with this, or it won't be at the level that we have today. You're right.
And knowing your history, and when they start going to the doctors and stuff like that, hopefully it won't be a problem. We can find ways to detect it even quicker and better than they are now, but it'll also put them on a watch list. Basically, whenever the doctor says, well, you know, there's, well, my mother, we're going to watch that, because yeah, they've gotten really big about, if you have
family history,
everything you do now, you have to fill out 9 forms of the exact same thing about your family history. And they really do watch that.
You know, I had breast cancer in my family. My grandmother had breast cancer and my mom's sister had breast cancer. So it was sort of in my family, but again, I looked really healthy and I was young, and who would have thought? So I think you definitely have to be vigilant about your own health.
I think you're right, because I think doctors, I can tell you my general practitioner, he's our age, so he's not old. I mean, he's in his 40s, but he is old school. So yeah, you show up for a physical if you're under 50, and he's kind of like, well, why are you here? Like, well, I thought I was supposed to be. Yeah, yeah. I thought it was a good idea. And he says, you know, you're fine. And when I hurt my knee, I went in, he kind of hit it with a hammer and says, that hurt? A little. He says, well, it should hurt. You're good. You know, so.
You might want to get another doctor.
Well, so, but there are doctors, and one of the reasons I like him, he doesn't go into that freak out mode.
Right.
And the whole, your BMI is such and such, which is a load of horse crap that we could go into for hours here. But on the flip side, I think they can default to the other end, where they're trying so hard not to overreact to every little thing and go with every little trend that you really do have to stand up for yourself and say, look, this is not like me. This is, I feel weird. Yeah.
You also, you trusted your instinct to say, well, I did find this.
I did. You're right.
And something told you to say that.
You're right. And if I hadn't, thank goodness I said it.
Yeah. So,
but I could have gone to the doctor months earlier and I didn't.
Well,
and it is. Yeah, but
that's that, as you said, you're busy. I mean, you've got a million things going on.
I was trying not to overreact, quite honestly.
Right.
I was trying to not make something that hopefully probably wasn't there, because why would it have been there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's the bottom line, is you do have to pay attention
like
to your
body. Like you said, all of the normal signs pointed to all was well, because you were young.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You were healthy.
Yeah.
Ish.
Yeah.
You know,
you felt good.
As far as you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't always this big. I had my surgery and then got bigger, but I'm one of the odd ones. But
they're testing.
But you know, I had history in my family, but it was older people.
Mm-hmm.
Not much older. I mean, my grandfather died at 57 from a heart attack, which is, you know, in 1981 was still young.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so.
But it's not 40s.
No, mm-hmm. no, it's not. And whenever I'm sitting here, why am I having this pain all the way up and down my left arm and across my chest into the top of my right arm? Why is this? And then get to the doctor, and they're like, oh, no, we don't think that's this. They'll do something else. And that wasn't it. Then put me on a stress test, and the EKG would go nuts.
But don't you feel like,
and that's what all she wrote.
Don't you feel like there's a lot of good that can come out of something bad? I mean, if you ask me, are you glad you had breast cancer? Of course I would say I'm not glad I had breast cancer. I'm not completely insane, but
silver line.
You know, there's so many good things that came from it, and I just feel lucky that I will live the rest of my life with the gratitude and the appreciation that I have today because of it. And it just, you know, it kind of makes me live in color instead of black and white. And I feel really lucky every day to feel that way. And I wouldn't have had that experience not have happened.
Well, this is, and it's a very good segue. You've started writing.
Yeah. So I always wanted to be a writer, and I had started writing before. I've actually been working on a book for a while, and life just kind of got in the way. But after this happened, I was a financial advisor. I quit my job. I wasn't planning on doing that, but after I went through all the surgeries and everything, I was always planning on going back to work. But then, you know, it just didn't feel right, and just what we were talking about before, you make changes. And I started a blog called Crazy Perfect Life, and you can follow it on Facebook, Crazy Perfect Life, or you can go to the website at www.crazyperfectlife.com.
It's a great URL.
Yeah,
it is. I love that.
Thanks.
Well, and you will be sure and link with all of ours as well. So,
but yeah, I'm working on two books right now, and I have the blog, and am really excited, and am doing what I've always wanted to do, but maybe didn't have the courage to do until now. And that's awesome. It is. It's great. It's really cool, and I feel very blessed and fortunate.
So where are you in the, you said you're working on two books?
I'm working on two books, yeah. Yes.
Where are you in that process?
So one of them, I am almost done. It's a nonfiction. I'm almost done with it. I almost have the proposal completely finished and hope to maybe towards November-ish, if you will, start trying to find a literary agent. And then I have a fiction book, that the one that I've been working on, and that one's almost done also. But the nonfiction book really is the one that speaks to my heart, and that's the one that I just am really excited about and passionate about, and hope to get published.
Excellent.
I'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do your book tour.
I would love it. This will be the first stop. Let's make it happen.
We'll have you here. We'll have you on the Less Desirable.
Less Desirable.
We'll have you everywhere.
Great. So, yeah.
You've been awesome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
I really enjoyed you being here.
Likewise. I'm sorry that you had to go through what you went through, but I know you're stronger because of it.
I'm here and I'm happy. And that's got a great wife who was there the whole time. We weren't even married, and she took above and beyond, took good care of me. And
plus, she'll kick your ass if you get back in that situation.
This is true. This is true. I mean, there's not a day it goes by that I don't know where my pills are, that I don't know what I'm supposed to be eating. Yeah. What I know, I mean, I'm 6'1", she's 4'10", and I'm scared to death of her.
Yeah, exactly right.
And
as well you should
as
be.
Well I should
exactly.
be. And but yeah, she was my mother, who I'll admit 100% I am a mama's boy. But my mother deferred to her.
Wow.
And I was very surprised at that.
Because she knew you were in good hands.
She knew I was in great hands. It. And had it been anybody else, even my mother, I don't know that I would have gotten the care and attention that I got. So I'm
and
happy.
Probably
with that.
Wouldn't have listened to him either.
And I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I'm scared of him.
We're all afraid of our pilots.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
I don't think my husband's scared of me.
Oh,
no, maybe that is.
No, he won't admit it.
I really don't think he is. Maybe that's another show.
That's another show.
Yeah.
Oh, good topic.
You show me. Yeah. I'll show you a liar if he says he's not scared. That's
wrong.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, let's talk about something that's not nearly as potentially depressing as illness
it's
and sickness.
Serious.
Yeah, this is the real serious stuff right here. No, yeah. I'm joking. This is the beer of the week. We're going to talk about the very hoppy Goose Island.
Yes, it is.
Goose IPA. The bold hop finish of the bright citrus aromas and everything about it. It is only really 5.9%, but the
you get a lot of bang.
I'm trying to find the and it's only 55 IBUs, which is
I can't believe.
Which
that.
Is I think somebody did some calculating wrong.
Yeah,
because
they forgot
IBUs,
to carry a one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is not nearly as big as our standard. The palate, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. But still,
this had a lot of hop in it, but. You know, it could have been that they mentioned the citrus flavor. I got a lot of citrus out of it, too. Got a lot of lemon flavor to me. But I liked it. I had it before. It was a 4 on Untappd at that time. And even though I'm a little wary of the hoppiness now, I'm going to stick with the 4. I think Goose Island's one of my favorite breweries. I'll have it again.
All right, John.
Paul just reminded me, I think I've had it before, too. And I don't remember what I gave it, but I'm going to give it a 4 for today because I liked it. And, I was in the mood to have something tear the lacquer off my teeth, and it sure fit the bill.
Well, it did.
I was in Chicago a month ago, and you cannot escape Goose Island.
No, you can't.
I mean, they are extra proud of their Goose Island in Chicago. I went and told them, I said, I want something that's local that I can't get in North Carolina. Well, here's a Goose Island. I can get Goose Island in North Carolina. Well, but you don't have this one. I said, it's Matilda. I've already had that. I can have that anywhere I want to. I want something different. Well, here's your more Goose Island.
Sister Sophie.
Yeah, yeah. Here's more Goose Island. All right, give me that one. And yeah. I hadn't had that one. But I believe that because it's green and it's very highlighted in green, I believe this might be the equivalent of the Green Line that yes. they have. I too, am very over the hops, but this is actually really good. And I'm thinking I'm going to do it 3.75.
That's pretty strong for you right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's high praise.
Yeah, 3.75 for the Goose Island IPA. Now, the disclaimer here is Dara did not drink the beer. So
I didn't drink the beer because, you know, I'm just eating so cleanly now. And I know I'm no fun anymore.
Yes, you are.
But I don't drink anymore. It is what it is. I just try to eat really clean.
That was not a judgment from me.
I
was just saying why
the listeners want people to, would ask.
Why didn't you ask her what she thought? I didn't want to.
Yeah. You know. So. I have alcohol envy.
Don't worry. I got it covered.
Yeah, we'll cover it for you. Don't worry. Yeah. You just keep eating clean and make the rest of us look unclean. Yeah.
More for me, I say.
Mm-hmm. Except for the French fries every once in a while.
There you go.
You got to
gotta live a little.
See, I can do without that.
Are you serious?
As long as I can have the flesh of my fellow vertebrates, everything's okay.
Yeah.
Well, that too, but I mean, you can't. God. Yeah. See, I think I've got to have at least a little Irish in me because I love my potatoes.
Yeah.
I do love some potatoes.
Well, I have some Irish in me, but I don't care.
Yeah.
About potatoes. But I got the Scottish in me that wants a bunch of meat. Give me the more meat, I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's the Scottish Welsh in me, too.
So we'd like to get your thoughts on the beer of the week and the subjects we've talked about today, or any subject that we have ever talked about. We invite you to send your topics, beer recommendations, your questions, comments, and put-downs to thebeerdadspodcast@gmail.com. Tips? You got a tip? You got a tip? Anybody got a tip? I have tips.
Go ahead.
I wrote some down.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I forgot about my tips. I had to come up with one.
So, I'm looking here. I've got plenty to choose from. If you pour cheap vodka through one of the Brita water filters three or four times, and then chill it for about an hour, it will actually smooth the taste down. And because, because cheap vodka, sometimes referred to as rock gut vodka, is not always good to just drink. So if you want that, you're not going to get, Goose Island, but Grey Goose or Kettle One or something, you're not going to get that from Aristocrat. But say you have Aristocrat and you just want
to. You might get it to Smirnoff.
You might. So just say, okay, I'm going to try this and try it and sift it through there about three or five times and chill it for about an hour and see if it doesn't turn into at least a decent sipping vodka.
Interesting. So my vodka tip is buy Tito's.
Tito's.
Yeah, it's good vodka. My brother turned me onto that.
That's an American vodka.
It's an American vodka. Yeah. I think Texas.
Texas.
Yeah. It's good. It's good stuff. So that's my vodka
corn
tip.
Vodka instead of potato vodka. Yeah. You're Russian.
It's very tasty. But I guess my tip would be one of my favorite websites. If you like gadgets and little tips on tools that make it easy to do certain things, Cool Tools. CoolTools.org or .com. I can't remember which, but just Google Cool Tools. It's a great site. It's everything from something that's really handy, and if you happen to be in woodworking, which I'm not, but if you're into that, they'll have tips about that. But they also have basic, straightforward tips on digital stuff. I mean, you name it, crosses the spectrum. So it's been one of my go-to sites for years.
And squat it again.
Cool Tools.
Cool Tools.
Yeah, with a C. Not one of those goofy K-O-O-L things. Yeah.
That's yeah, not cool like tools. Cigarettes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool.
All right. I have the vodka tip.
Yeah.
Vodka can actually be used in pie crusts.
Hmm.
There is something.
Why do you know that?
Yeah. He's
Paul the Baker.
Paul the Baker.
Yeah.
There is something in the alcohol and in the vodka itself that will keep your pie crusts from burning and drying out, yet it actually almost creates a little layer so that your filling doesn't make it soggy. Hmm.
So, and it burns the alcohol out.
Yeah, it burns the alcohol out. I mean, in the normal baking.
Oh, well, that's a bummer.
Well, you don't want to. Not everything has to
I guess
to
you like your brownies plain, too, huh? But,
so as the teaser on
don't
the
get
next
going on my brownies
show,
now.
On the next show, I will come back with all the full science on why that works. And
wow.
Proper, because it doesn't take much. Usually it's about like a half ounce.
We should have a baking show. We should do a whole show about baking.
I will not be at that show. Cooking is not my forte.
Oh, come on. But
no, really.
That's why we have Paul.
Yes.
Really, if you haven't had Paul cook for you, you really got to do it.
I have to arrange it.
You got to do it.
Chief cook and bottle washer.
I have too.
So
I can do dishes.
So that's my claim to fame. I can do dishes.
I can prep.
Yeah.
I'm a good prepper.
I can chop vegetables.
Yeah.
I can too, and I still have all my fingers.
There you go.
Except for
so
one.
I mean, that's the word the good comes. Good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. Good chopper. All right. Well, just a reminder that Beer Dads podcast is presented by Small Batch Beer, located 241 West 5th Street and down on the web at smallbatchws.com. You can find more about the Beer Dads at thebeerdadspodcast.com. Laura, thank you again for being here. So
thank
very
you so much.
Much.
Any parting words?
CrazyPerfectLife.com.
That's
there you go.
Like.
And remember, folks, that any knucklehead can father a child, but it takes a real man to be a dad. Until we pop the cap on the next subject, my name is Tim.
I'm Wimpy.
Get on, Paul.
And we're out of here.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the contributors and are not necessarily shared by our distributors or hosting company. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of such and such Limited Inc.
Ain't that the truth?